This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
Absolutely, one heck of a wrestling weekend in Brooklyn. There was so much professional wrestling in New York, in the tri-state area, in Brooklyn itself on Saturday and Sunday, hell, in Philly on Friday as well. Man, my mind was blown. It was absolutely awesome. What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. I'm the host of The Kevin Kelly Show. That's why it's called The Kevin Kelly Show, ironically enough. And every few weeks or so, we get together here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com is the website home. And we talk about all things in professional wrestling. And we usually have an awesome guest. And tonight, no different. Because our guest tonight is a return visit from the first guest on the first Kevin Kelly episode. And it's Adam Cole. So Ring of Honor star Adam Cole will be here later on. And we'll talk about all things going on with him. Get his thoughts on the weekend. We'll talk about... I'm going to ask him a question if he thinks that... WWE is targeting Ring of Honor, and what do we think about it? Plus, I want to ask him about Kevin Owens and other Ring of Honor alum that have gone on to compete in WWE. And is he going to, at some point in his career, leave Ring of Honor and go to the WWE? Because that's what everybody seems to be saying. But anyway, Justin Rosero, in just a few moments, will tell you exactly where you can find the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week, because you might just be listening to it like some guy's next to you on the train and he smells badly, but you can hear it bleeding through his headphones. So you're kind of listening in a little bit, but you don't want to get too close. But the ability for you to have the Kevin Kelly Show on your own headphones, be able to listen at your own time, I think is worth having Justin on the show. So it is a good and bad situation. Now, the good is he'll tell you where to find the show. The bad is he joins us now. Hello, JR. How are you?
What's up, Double K's? How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm just teasing. Hey, man, it was great seeing you and the boys on Saturday. Now, Dalton Castle.
Yes.
Justin Rosero. I mean, was there, did you feel like it was plagiarism? What?
I'll say this. We are both great at what we do.
The crew was there Saturday for some Ring of Honor action at Field of Honor in Brooklyn,
yes.
And that was a lot of fun. I had a great time.
What a cool place.
Yeah, neat, right?
So I'd never been to Coney Island. Been to Brooklyn just briefly. Like, I'd never been like to the sights of Brooklyn, so it was pretty neat to go there. We walked up and down the boardwalk, had hot dogs at Nathan's, which was cool.
Yep,
and got my picture in front of the Nathan's hot dog eating contest board, because as you know, here at PlaceToBeNation.com, 3 years running, I've reviewed the hot dog eating contest, so I thought it was important for me to go by there and see the big board and where the stage usually is and where the contest happens, so that was really cool. And just watching the show, you know, in that atmosphere with probably the coolest backdrop I've ever seen a wrestling show at, where just over the outfield fence, you see all the rides and the boardwalk and the water, and it's really just a relaxed atmosphere to watch a show. You know, you lose some of the rowdy environment that a lot of Ring of Honor shows have, I will say that, but as a one-off, like, unique show to take outside, and the weather was unbelievable.
Yeah,
it was really, really cool.
It's again, I think, what separates Ring of Honor from other pro wrestling promotions is its atmosphere. But a departure from the atmosphere in a situation like this, like you said, in my opinion, not a bad thing, just a unique setting. We did everything differently on this night.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I didn't wear a suit. I was out there in my, you know, my Mets road jersey and shorts. I wish we did every show outside. It was incredible. And by my partner and Dan McGinn's partner, Steve Carino, wore a mask. He wanted to dress up like a mascot, as mascots are so prevalent in sports. Unfortunately, he chose a cow.
Now,
I don't know who that's the mascot of, but he went with it, and he sweated about 40 pounds out. So
now here's a testament to you, Kev, because as soon as I saw the cow, I had this great joke lined up. I was going to open the show with. I was going to say, and there was a cow on commentary, and he was sitting next to a mascot, right? And then I saw you, and you're looking great, KK. I couldn't even make the joke. You looked great in your Mets jersey. I complimented you on the field, and I wanted to say it again here today. So whatever keep it going.
It's, when Stevie came on, Stevie Richards was on back a few months ago, and I'm going to start doing DDP yoga. I've done everything but start DDP yoga. Like I did a lot of the eating plan that was in the, and just started eating clean and really cutting out dessert and just being smart and stop being such a glutton. So, everything except the exercise, but, having our pal Stevie Richards on and Diamond Dallas Page before him, it was like, you know what? It's time to do a little something. So,
well, I can tell you it's paying off. So there you go.
Thanks, buddy. So it was a cool night Saturday, and we had a lot of great action. We'll talk about that a little bit. But then, of course, Sunday, and you got to give props, man, to WWE. Not only, of course, SummerSlam is the second biggest event, many would say, historically, on the WWE calendar. I'm a Royal Rumble fan. I put Royal Rumble at the top of the list, right behind WrestleMania, but... Man, for the spectacle and for what they did and how much press they garnered with Jon Stewart, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, I thought they did a fantastic job. So what were your overall reaction? We'll talk about the main event because we want to get your thoughts about the conclusion of the match. But what did you think about the overall presentation and the overall night and feel of everything in Brooklyn at SummerSlam?
I had a great time. So... Scott, as many of you know, is a big wig in his Knights of Columbus chapter, and he has a brother knight that owns a company that has access to one of the luxury boxes at the Barclays Center, and we were able to gain usage of that box.
Now, the Knights of Columbus is a Catholic-based organization. It's a charitable organization.
Yes.
Does Scott at all feel hypocritical that he is profiting from the volunteer work that he does for a nonprofit organization?
No, I don't think he feels bad. But I will say
is he going to make a charitable donation to the Knights of Columbus in the dollar amount for the tickets that would have that it would have cost?
Well, so he didn't take it from the Knights of Columbus. It's an outside company. It's just a friend of his that's in the Knights. So it'd be like you and Dan are buddies. And you have access to this box, and he's able to use it. It's not through PlaySimulation.com. That's just how you met. You know what I'm saying?
All right. I was just trying to stir up the pot a little bit.
I will say this. Scott does more, and I'm going to put him over once because he took care of us, and then we're done with it. He does more charitable He does more charitable Knights of Columbus things, I think, than even, is it Christopher Columbus that they're named? Whoever they're named after, Johnny Columbus. Ever imagined this company would be volunteering. Like every weekend they're out doing stuff. Every multiple times a week. It's unbelievable. You should follow them on Facebook. You'll be amazed. You'll feel awful.
I was a knight for a brief period of time.
Not like this.
But yeah, he's probably fourth degree, way up there, grand poobah status.
Yes, he's way up there. Him and our buddy Dr. G are the leaders of this group. They're the Grand Knight and the Deputy Grand Knight.
Awesome.
So they lead the council, and very hardcore, as Dan said. But they do. They do a ton for the community. It's really impressive. So that's it. I'm done putting Scott over. He's a gray-haired son of a bitch. So,
so we'll leave it at that. I wonder, we said before, I asked beforehand if he had, if Scott colored his hair. I shouldn't have started with that. I should have started with, when I saw Scott on Saturday, I almost didn't recognize him because I thought his hair was darker, or it looked darker the last time I saw him.
And then he said, look at that cow at ringside.
Yeah, see how it is? And you just spun it all around. But anyway, all right. So,
but it was cool. It was awesome.
Sidelines were great. The building looked fantastic. And
the crowd was, I know, I read, and I know they dipped at times, but overall was red hot. I mean, red hot for everything. All the big things anyway. And, there were times where they cooled off, I think rightfully so. But I liked the card. I mean, I thought, I liked that they had so many matches. I thought there wasn't a lot of downtime once you got past that opening promo.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the structure, you know, maybe a match here or there could have been reshuffled, but I'm a fan of when you have like all the undercard matches building to like the big matches on top. I like that setup more than like sprinkling them throughout the card. And I don't know, I had a great time, and I know being there live can skew it, so maybe if I got to rewatch it back, but I thought there was a lot of good stuff, mainly in ring. I thought the booking all night long was really, really questionable, too bad, I guess is the range I put it, and that's including the two big matches. So we can, I don't know, you want to go match by match? How do you want to do it?
Well, I was in and out of it. I watched, I saw the crazy four-team tag match, which
was awesome. But
if you were listening to the commentary, Cole said something that was either a mistake or it was a rule that was completely ridiculous. He alluded to the fact that if both members of the same team were in the ring, that one member of a team could pin the other,
right,
and could capture the titles.
Well, that happened before. That was the New Age Outlaws rule, remember? You were there.
No, it's stupid.
Well, so if it's not, so here's the theory behind it. And you
I'm not saying that he
you can call Vinny Roo up. So here's the theory behind it. If you
were stupid then,
I'm not saying it's not stupid. I'm explaining to you.
And it's stupid now. I would not, if it was me, and this is my point, if it was me, I wouldn't reference something so stupid.
Right.
If there is an obvious plot hole, you don't say, hey, look, a plot hole.
Well, the idea is that it's not elimination. So the match ends. And I know it's stupid that you could pin yourself. But it was done, this precedent in the company. So whether it's dumb or not, I think he was just calling back to that. Because
right.
It did so happen. The Outlaws, I'm pretty sure it was the Outlaws, right? They pinned each other.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not saying that it's factually inaccurate, but he did not reference history. He could have said, boy, you remember a time in WWE right. history when the New Age Outlaws were involved in a match similar to this, similar rules, similar setting. And they actually manipulated the situation to where one New Age Outlaw pinned the other and they captured or retained the tag team titles. Well, I can assure you that the other three teams are aware of that and probably won't let primetime players, they would be the obvious or maybe New Day.
But we're
Day.
Just having fun here, Maggle. We don't have time for this shit.
I know. But I'm just saying, if he's going to take the time to talk about a plot hole, then he has to back it up with, this is not a plot hole, and here's why.
Right. Okay. Well, you're asking way too much from these clowns.
All right. And so that match was crazy live, but to me, that little statement just threw me for a loop, and I just spent the whole rest of the time like thinking how asinine that was that he would say that.
New Day is awesome, though.
When they won, their celebration was one of the best things I've seen.
They were phenomenal as this heel group, and even in the ring, they're great. Big E is great. Infectious attitude, and everyone else worked really well too. I thought the primetime players have done really well with this run, and that splash on the apron was nasty when Big E just splattered Darren Young. And also I liked, and I don't know, me, your take is more of an insider than me, I thought it was impressive when one of the matadors botched the spot and the other one stepped in for him, and it went as pretty much as seamlessly as you can go. Did you catch that?
I did, and that was a good cover. Nobody panicked. Everybody just did their job, kept going, and that's fine. It happens. I didn't even put it this way. I knew it was a little bit of a bobble there, but I didn't notice the other one coming in and sort of picking up the slack, if you will.
Yeah, so the like one fell off the apron or fell off the top rope. The other one kind of jumped up, and they just like redid. You could tell they're going back into the spot, but they did it smoothly enough that
exactly,
you know, it looked maybe like a splant. So just a cool moment there by one of
them. Right. It looked to me like, okay, well, they meant to do that. I meant to do that.
And, of course, they planted the seed early by having Sheamus be first to make you think maybe he'll be back later to cash in. That was one of the, you know, rumors floating around the luxury box where that happened. What did you think?
Was there a lot of alcohol flowing around the luxury box as well?
Not too much, actually. Not too much. Scott was having a few, tossing a few back, celebrating his big night, getting us in there. But otherwise, it was a long weekend.
Knights of Columbus, Catholic-based charity, and he's there pounding beers at a free wrestling show. That's boy.
He's doing well.
Anyway.
It was a long weekend. I was pretty much done with any idea of even drinking by that point, because we got into town at like, you know, 4:34. We got into our hotel, which was right a block from the World Trade Center, and we're only in the hotel for about 40 minutes. Met up with Steve Willie. We had a couple beers there, and then hustled over to Coney Island for your show. And then Scott wanted to show off one of his local joints in Brooklyn, Spumoni Gardens. So we went there and hung out there for a bit, and then crashed. Woke up the next morning, went to the Yankee game for Andy Pettit Day. So we got to the Bronx around 10:30, walked around down there, went inside, and then hustled out of the game. And the way that game was going, we left. It was only the fifth inning at 3:30, so we left at 3:30 to hustle down back to Brooklyn. And then grab dinner quick at Shake Shack, where I saw Oscar of Men on a Mission with his wife.
Oh, my God.
and I was afraid. We didn't want to say anything. You know? I don't know. Because I wasn't 100% positive. But then I read a report that he was backstage. So
hey, by the way, they just popped the Dudleys here on Raw.
A cool little feud.
So, and Devon was running around telling everybody that we're not booked for SummerSlam. Somebody else said, "Well, what about the rest of the weekend?" And he didn't answer. So, Devon Dudley, you're a liar for not giving the whole story.
I do enjoy, you know, everyone who was hating on everything last night at the end of that show, and also marking out for the Dudley boys. But anyway,
let's talk about the end of the show.
Okay,
let's talk about the main event match.
Before we get to that, I want to build to that. So. Anyway, so we get to SummerSlam. I wanted to talk about Ziggler and Rusev, because this is where like the perceived bad booking began with this double countout in this match. I don't think that was bad booking. I actually didn't mind it, and I wanted to get your thought on that.
No, it didn't bother me in the least, in the absolute least.
So I have multiple reasons for it.
They have taken... Okay, Rusev is not as... The package of Rusev and Lana was special. Now, you would think that if they divide the package in half or split it in half, now you'd have two over parts. But the sum is greater than the equal of, you know, than the total of its parts, however that saying goes.
But see, I think Rusev has been better in ways. Like, he's actually shown that he doesn't need Lana to kind of carry him. Like, his promo stuff has been pretty good, his character stuff. I actually think he's been still pretty good. I think his presentation is what's hurt him more than anything he's doing. But the reason the double countout didn't bother me is that it wasn't a, you know, highly positioned match on the show. And I know it's the second biggest show of the year, blah, blah, blah. But it's like the sixth or seventh match down on the card. It's a feud that was not going to end on this night either way, because they still need to have the big mixed tag. I mean, that's the big, you know, linchpin match of what this feud's going to be.
Of course.
And Rusev can't really take another loss. He, you know, just had his second one on TV the other week, and then you don't want to put him into a losing streak. Dolph just came back from his injury. So, we haven't had a double countout in a long time. When's the last time there was one on pay-per-view? I don't think there's been one this year, at the very least. And I thought it was cool, because it wasn't like, you know, some people just, I don't know. It wasn't like WrestleMania 5 with Brutus Beefcake and Ted DiBiase meander around the ring for 9 minutes and then have this heatless brawl on the floor, get double count out, and the feud goes nowhere. This was like a heated fight after a really good match where they beat the crap out of each other on the floor and couldn't get back in the ring, and then had a big post-match thing that's leading to more feud. So I know it's your big show, but to me you have enough around it on the card in theory, you know, regardless of booking later, that this one didn't bother me. And I was surprised at how many people in the moment were like, you know, pissed off about it. And I'm like, really? It's Dolph Ziggler and Rusev. Half of you didn't give a shit about this match a week ago, and now you feel like you were screwed out of a finish for a match you didn't care about?
That's kind of right. I appreciated the efforts. I appreciated the work. I appreciated how hard these guys were going at it. And the story that they were telling physically, man, they were going balls to the wall. So the finish itself didn't bother me in the least.
Right.
Lana in the denim, what did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's the vibes of Kelly Kapowski. Can't go wrong with that.
I don't know what that is.
Kelly from Saved by the Bell?
Oh, okay. I was a grown-up. I had wife and children by the time that was on the air.
You had children in, like, 1991? 90?
Well, I was with my wife by 1991. So. I was out of college. I was out of college, and I was working.
Yeah, okay.
Were you in college in 1991?
No.
What are you, like eighth grade?
91, sixth grade.
Jeez. I graduated December of 1990. I was working.
December of 90, I just turned 10.
Jesus, you suck. McGinn, too?
Yeah, he McGinn looks a was 10. Older, though. Said he hair dye.
Same age as you.
You wouldn't think so.
Why? Why do you say that?
He acts all angry and crotchety.
He's got a big smile on his Skype picture.
That's the one picture I've ever seen him take with a smile.
That's not true at all. King Basil would disagree.
King Basil.
How about, all right, so they're showing highlights of...
So let's talk about that match.
Some stills of Jon Stewart and assisting Seth Rollins to now he's a double champion. But, all right, tons of press for Jon Stewart and WWE and blah, blah, blah.
He's on tonight, but do you think he's one and done? Or they were talking about this on our reaction show, PlayStation.com. Go check that out. It's a show they record right after the pay-per-view ends. Do you think he's one and done, or do you think this is like a kind of a dream thing where he's going to hang around a little bit and be on TV here and there?
I'm
not saying a regular full-time character, but like more than less. I mean, he's retiring and nothing else going on.
Yeah, why wouldn't it be Jon Stewart versus John Cena at WrestleMania?
I don't see that. I mean, Stewart's a small guy. How can you just... I don't think so. Not a Mania. I could see him doing a big Raw. Like, remember they did Cena and K-Fed, like, on the New Year's Day Raw? Like, that was kind of cool.
That might be awesome. What they do.
K-Fed was great.
Golly, you watch anything, wouldn't you?
K-Fed was a great heel. He got it. That's a guy that should have gotten to stick around as, like, a manager or something. What a natural friggin' heat magnet he was. Little annoying douche... asshole, like it was perfect.
Don't we have enough of those in the world? Why do we have to give somebody the
that's what wrestling is? It's the escape, right? You want to see that guy get his ass kicked, just like Vince. You want to see your boss get beat up. That's what it is. Everyone wants to see a guy like Cena beat the crap out of a nerd like K-Fed.
See, I want to see. I don't know. I'm kind of a fan of trained professionals. Call me crazy, but again, I don't mind.
So there's one match, one time.
No,
I'm
just
saying. All the matches with all the professionals you can watch.
But
you
him,
make it
I
like then having 19 of those matches a night.
What a douche.
It's 100 matches a week you can watch with professionals.
He was a douche in pop culture. Now, Jon Stewart I find interesting.
Yeah. Did you get like an Arquette vibe at first?
Yes, completely. Thank you. You said it. I was thinking it.
But way better.
With a bullshit finish in the main event and a celebrity being so heavily involved that reminded me of David Arquette. I'm like, my God, this is WCW.
At least he didn't win the title.
You're right. Exactly.
But Rollins looked awesome. Like he dominated a lot. I mean, he stood out. He was a star. So that's why he didn't bug me as much. Like, because he was presented in that he could have won anyway. Did you get that feeling?
It was interesting to me because I saw the beginning and then the end. So I missed the middle, but I was first just taken with his athleticism right off the bat. And then as they went to the finish, I was like, oh, okay, good. The finish really got me. But I believed that I think he's incredible. I think he's awesome. I do want to say this about I'm jumping ahead a little bit. I want to talk about Cesaro and Kevin Owens.
Mm-hmm.
My God, I thought Cesaro was like he was head and shoulders better than Kevin Steen. So good.
Yeah, he carried a lot of the match. I thought Owens held his own. That was a tough spot for them. I mean, they were in a featured spot, but in between those matches and coming off that dead zone women's match, they were in a unique spot. And it's crazy to think that the crowd would be, of all the matches on that card, if you had to say which one would they be most quiet for, and you said Cesaro Owens, I don't think anyone would have believed you. But it ended up being that way. And being there, it was just a tough slot.
Well,
Owens'
mystique is gone.
No, I don't think so. If they open with that match, I think the crowd's absurd. Like, I think they're,
his mystique is gone. Yeah. For the time being. Now, he's the kind of guy that can get his heat back.
Right. Yeah, I won't say it's gone. I mean, I haven't watched TakeOver yet, but I'm sure his heat was mystique was all there against Finn Balor.
But in the wake of him losing and then losing again...
Sure.
Now, the mystique is gone.
Damn.
Adam Cole's our guest later on. Michael Cole last night even said this is a must win for Kevin Owens.
Sure.
That's the perception within the company.
Michael Cole says a lot of stupid things.
That's the again.
Well, so
he
what
is
perception
the,
led them to putting that match second from the top on their second biggest show of the year?
It's also the traditional dead spot.
Nah, not the way they shaped this card up.
And that is true. It did feel a little bit more like a traditional wrestling program.
Right. This is a match. If they didn't care, they would have had it like where Stardust was. You know what I mean? They clearly thought well enough of these guys to go out there and fill that gap and keep at least the crowd where they could for 14 minutes and be like a semi-main. It didn't feel like Jimmy Snuka versus Rick Rude or anything like that. You know what
now,
I mean?
I did not see that match, but I understand that was pretty good.
Snuka Rude?
No, not Snuka Rude. What's his face? Stardust.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. Stephen Amell did well. He held his own. I liked it. He had a couple moves. He played face in peril. It was a nice spot for Neville, too. Like, I like that he got a lot of the shine. He hit his finish and got the win. I thought that was really cool. It was fine. It was a good spot. I liked most stuff. I didn't think there were too many down spots, like, in ring-wise. I mean, the IC title match was quick. And really, just a women's match. I went 15 minutes and just not good. I mean, I felt bad for them. They were trying, but just not what we needed out of them.
Right.
And I know they tried. They tried to put them back end of the show, give them 15 minutes, go out there, do your thing. But it really just dragged.
And word on the street is that John Cena used his power and influence to put the kibosh on the four horsewomen or whatever they're called, doing a number on the Divas.
I don't know. You believe that?
No, I'm just saying that's the word on the street.
Yeah, don't buy it. Sounds like malarkey.
And hijinks. All right, so let's talk about this.
They're the stars of Total Divas. That's their big show. Crossover. Like, why now? Oh, they need John Cena all of a sudden to protect them? Come on. And I'm telling you, there was Bella merch everywhere around that arena. Like, yeah. I mean, women everywhere had the socks, the shirts. I saw guys with Brimo shirts on. Like, that stuff's actually selling. So, I don't know. They're doing something right with them, I guess.
Well, again, I agree with that's the way they've continued to do their business, and that's what they'll continue to do.
But my point was quick before the main event on Rollins. I thought he came off like a star. I thought he looked like a star. I thought he did a fantastic job. I don't think the finish hurt him because I think it would have been believable for him to win that match. It's not one of those matches where he just got his ass kicked and then was saved at the end. You know, like the one I always reference is like Bad Blood with Undertaker and Shawn Michaels in the cell, where Shawn just got murdered around the ring until Kane came out. Like, it almost made it seem like he had to save him. Like, Shawn probably couldn't have won on his own. Like, this didn't feel like that. Like, Rollins really carried a lot of that match and looked like a star in doing it.
Right.
And I also like that he hit the final move. That's one of my minor pet peeves when there's outside interference that leads directly to the pin. So, like, if Stewart had hit Cena and then Rollins, like, rolled over and covered him, that would have felt worse to me.
My other pet peeve is when they have the interference, and this doesn't happen too much in WWE, but I see it elsewhere. Interference, cover, 1-2, kick out, and then they go on and do four or five more things.
Right.
That drives me up a wall. But I agree with you that it led to one thing that then led to the fall. I like that a lot. He's a star. He's amazing. He's great. He's fantastic. That's Seth Rollins. That's our guy. So
okay.
I like him a lot. All right, let's talk about this main event because we got to move this along. We can't be here all night dwelling on this stuff.
Okay.
We got to live in the now.
So the crowd was way more fired up for Undertaker than I anticipated. Like, I was expecting it to be all pro Brock and like booing Taker. And all night, people were doing the dueling chants leading up to that match. And Taker got a, really hearty welcome when he came out, 50-50 at the least, if not even tilted more towards him. And I will say that even after all these years, as jaded as you can become, as many shows as I've seen, Undertaker's entrance live is still really cool. Like, really, really cool. I don't know if you feel that way, but I do. And the anticipation for that match in the arena, to me and myself, all of a sudden I got into it as it was about to happen more than I had thought. Because going in, I was fearing that it would be a train wreck like Mania. That this Mike Francesa giant head cracks me up every time.
I love it. Hey, dog, I was there at Raw, and you know, I was talking to Vince, and on my way to Saratoga.
Dean Ambrose. Anyway. So I got into it because my fear was it was going to be a crappy match, and that either Taker was going to win clean, or we'd get some kind of screwy. You know, all the rumors going around with either Sting or Kane coming out, something to jumpstart Mania. The Rock was even rumored at one point, and it's going on, and I'm like, the crowd's actually getting into it, and these guys are working hard, and Taker's taking all these suplexes, and maybe his character's going to die in the ring, and that's how they want to wrap it up. Like that's how bad it looks for a while, and he's just beating the crap out of him. And Brock had that nasty cut across his head going on. And, you know, I thought the match was going pretty well. I'm like, all right, these guys are doing it. They're getting it done. This is much better than Mania. They're bumping around, and I start to think, you know, maybe Brock is going to win clean. Maybe they're letting Taker hang with him, look tough, and then Brock's going to get the win because they can't be dumb enough to have him lose to The Undertaker. They can't. And I sold myself on that during the match, even though heading in I feared the worst. And I still believe that if they didn't do the, as Dan McGinn would put, horse hockey that they did, and they just had Brock win clean, have Taker pass out in the Kimura, Taker wakes up, he gets a standing ovation from that crowd, that I guarantee you, because of how hot they were, they would have given him that moment. And if you're dead set on a rubber match, which it seems like they are, you can still sell it, even though Taker lost, by saying, I am, you know, look at you and look at me, Brock Lesnar. I withstood your best, and I'm still standing. You can't kill me. The Undertaker will never die. Like, and Brock is out to just kill him at this point. Like, to me, you can still sell a rematch without having to make it like Taker beat him or could beat him.
Right.
Do you agree
right.
with
and,
that?
It's more difficult. I think the finish that was done on paper was good, different, unique, interesting. I think there were two problems with execution that affected my, you know, I went, ah, that's kind of bullshit. That's kind of a bullshit finish. But so Taker had the hold on Brock a few minutes before, right? I can't even remember what the name of the hold is. It's like a triangle.
Yeah, the Hell's
right?
Gate.
Yep. Hell's Gate. So he has Hell's Gate on Brock. His shoulders are clearly down. That's when the referee needed to go over there and say, Taker, your shoulders are down. One, two, make Taker roll his shoulders away. One, two, shoulders are down. Again, one, two, finally Taker lets go of the hold. Now, if he does that, obviously when Brock is doing a submission hold, Charles Robinson would be completely in the right,
right
to be so focused on Brock's shoulders.
Yes.
Not the point of impact. Because if I am Charles Robinson and the Undertaker of all people is in that kind of hold, I am going to focus on the fulcrum there between Brock and Taker, because I'm worried about Taker getting his arm broke.
Right.
I'm not focused on Brock's shoulders unless he does it before. So by him not seeing or not paying attention to Taker's shoulders being down a few moments before that, then when we get to Brock's shoulders being down, it's nonsensical that he is the one paying attention to Brock's shoulders and not the Kimura. So when the bell rings, because the timekeeper sees Taker tap out, it doesn't work for me because we don't have the pretext. But the idea of Taker tapping out, timekeeper jumping the gun, ringing the bell, I like it. I like it. I think it was just a little fault in execution, and that's it.
So the other piece of execution I don't like about it, besides the nonsense that the timekeeper would see it, and in his, you know, the history of pro wrestling in the WWF, a timekeeper has never just rang the bell without the referee saying something. I mean, even
again,
Montreal had someone yelling at the timekeeper to ring the bell.
We have concern for the Undertaker.
Yeah, but that's never sold. Unless it was on commentary, but in the story, no one ever worked, because they're in a catch-22. They can't show, Taker's not like a normal old guy, right? It's not like Bob Backlund coming back, and they could sell that they're worried about this old man about to die, because they can't say that with The Undertaker, because they have to keep his mystique up, and he's the dead man, and he doesn't give in, and he's, you know, he's not an old cripple. Like, they can't put that over. So to me, there was never any hint of, like, oh, the timekeeper would be on pins and needles because we were all feared for the Undertaker's life. Like, that was never sold. So you're talking about the shoulder being out. That's an even bigger leap for me.
How is that a big leap?
The timekeeper's never rang the bell before. They've never done that.
I'm just saying. No. I'm right by Charles Robinson not paying attention to Taker's shoulder.
You are 100% right. I'm saying this is an even bigger leap to me.
I'm just playing devil's advocate right now with perhaps their rationale.
Right. Well, they don't have rationale. That's the problem. That's where I know. We're trying to sort it out, but there is none.
I didn't mind it because it was different, right?
Sure. And they gave the reason. If they had said all along, we are worried for Taker's health and everyone's on edge. Like, if the commentary put that over, if JBL was nervous at ringside because the Undertaker...
JBL was never nervous at ringside. He was such a fanboy for Taker.
Right.
That it almost took away from it.
Right, and they needed to put over that this guy could die at the hands of Brock Lesnar because he's old and he hasn't wrestled. He's only wrestled one, but they can't do it because it's The Undertaker.
And they can't do it because Cole isn't strong enough as a play-by-play guy and Lawler is no good at getting sympathy for anybody, most importantly, himself. So.
And to me, that hurts that part of it. And the other thing that hurts is that while the finish was creative and could have worked, the problem is... It's still the 50-whatever-year-old cripple Undertaker and your monster guy that really should never lose to anybody in theory, Brock Lesnar, passing out in his hold and losing. And you put all the mystique on Brock by having him end the streak. You had him destroy John Cena. And now you look where we are, and it's like...
Yeah, I know.
He's passing out to you, and the middle finger was great, but why couldn't he have done the middle finger and then picked him up and powerbombed him? You know what I mean?
I know.
The frustrating part, that this just wasn't needed to tell the story they want to tell. And if they're dead set on doing, a final match at Mania with Undertaker's career, or whatever they want to do, I argue they still could have done it, and they could have found a way into it without hurting Brock. Now, all that said... It's WWE, and these days, none of this shit really matters in the end. Like, 3 months from now, Brock just has to kill him a few more people, or we'll have a match. And look, even tonight, the Dudleys come out, everyone's, the Dudleys is great, and Dudley's great again. So it's like, whatever. I think at the end of the day, none of this really matters. It's all fodder for today. But I think it was a mistake to have Brock Lesnar lose The Undertaker, and to do a finish like that. To me, when they shocked everyone and had a great match, like, the crowd was so into that match, and they did a great job. And it's like they pissed it away. They ruined all the hard work they put in with that finish. It's like
sometimes a shit finish can ruin a great match, and that's one time where, only the devil's advocate in me is trying to say I'm looking for the silver lining in this because the match was great. That's one of the reasons why the double countout didn't bother me so much in Dolph and in and Rusev. It didn't bother me at all because the story continues. Some people like, I hate that finish. Clear winner, clear loser on pay-per-view. But the match itself was so great that the finish didn't bother me at all. The finish of this one bothered me only because I think it took away from the great match.
Yeah, because it left everyone walk. I mean, if you finish it clean with Brock winning, like, everyone leaves that arena thrilled because this match was way better than anyone thought. And like I said, you get the standing O for Taker. Brock keeps his heat, and you have a market that's red hot that you just ran a building in 3 nights in a row and sold out all three, one for your developmental company, one for TV,
exactly.
One for pay-per-view. And you really, I don't know how Raw is going. I haven't had the volume up, so I don't know if the crowd's into it. It seems like they are, but they really risked burning out what has become like their whole market in a way, Brooklyn, with their issues going on with MSG.
Yep.
Brooklyn's really become their home market. And it's like, was it worth risking to perceive saving a little face for The Undertaker who, I mean, how protected has he been in 25 years? Does he really need to be protected here against the most legitimately tough, badass wrestler maybe ever? Like,
well,
no one needs to be protected against Brock Lesnar. It's believable. He can look at John Cena. He destroyed him. Did it hurt John Cena at all?
No.
Okay. It's not Zack Ryder or Simon Dean killing these guys. It's Brock.
Boy, that would be so great. Imagine that.
Yes.
All right. Can we talk more about this later? Because I want to get Adam Cole on the line. How about this?
Yeah.
Would you be able to tell everybody where they could listen to the Kevin Kelly Show every week? And then we'll get Adam Cole on the horn. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I can do that. You can find The Kevin Kelly Show any of the following ways. You can subscribe to the brand new Kevin Kelly Show dedicated feed on iTunes. All the latest episodes will automatically download to your Apple devices. In addition, you can visit placetobenation.com, click on the Kevin Kelly Show banner or the PTBN podcast banner on the right-hand side. You can also visit stitcher.com and subscribe to Place to Be Podcast. And download Place to Be Nation podcast app by hitting placetobe.podbean.com/mobile on your iPhone or iPad. Twitter, place number 2 B Nation, real Kevin Kelly, facebook.com/Kevin Kelly Show, PTBN. Also want to give a shout out to the Cranston, Rhode Island Little League team, down 6-2 right now, top of the third in the Little League World Series to California, but hanging in. That is my former Little League, Kevin. So they had a great run in the East Regionals, and there they are in the Nationals. So good, best of luck to them in the rest of this game.
So the and while the Rhode Island team doing good, a lot of people here in Pennsylvania are excited because the Redland team dramatic comeback last night. And let's ask our guest, Adam Cole. Were you a Little League baseball player back in the day? Was that something you did?
I'll tell you what, I was not a Little League baseball player. I played, I guess it, at the time it was called midget football. I don't even know if that's politically correct now, but
oh, right.
That's what they called it then when I played. So yeah, I played a little football, and the town that I grew up in was like such a football town. It was crazy. Like the town lives on football and our giant auto auction. So I tried the football thing. To be honest, I didn't like it. I later like kind of delved into karate a little bit, but I played a little bit of football.
Well, everybody's pumped up about the old Redland squad. So anyway, while they're having fun in Williamsport, you're back after a busy day in the studio and you're doing your Ring of Honor thing. But I got to first say, the time when you were away between Final Battle and your return match against AJ Styles in May, it seemed like a really, really long 5 months for us.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it felt even longer for you.
Oh, man, it was brutal, Kevin. Like, I had heard all the time about people being out with injuries because that's just the nature of the beast with what we do. And fortunately for me, knock on wood, that was my first and hopefully only serious amount of time off due to, getting surgery from a serious injury. And I've said this before to other people. I think I've said this even to you privately, but the physical part was easy. The rehab, the training and getting my body, ready for everything, that part was easy. It was the mental game that was just brutal. Just because, fortunately for most of us in the wrestling industry, we don't look at this as a job. It is our lives. So for me, I didn't get to live for 5 months, just sitting back. And our team just did fantastic. I'm so proud to be a part of our locker room because I firmly believe that we have the best locker room in wrestling. But seeing how great that everyone was doing and not getting to be a part of that was really challenging for me. So I feel like I matured a little bit in those 5 months that I was off. Of course, realized once again how important wrestling is to me and kind of got my priorities straight in that realm. But I'll tell you what, coming back was just a roller coaster of emotions, and I could not be happier now that I'm back getting to do what I love to do.
You jump right back in with AJ Styles, and it's our first time talking really, publicly since that match. So kind of take me through that. Were you nervous? It's like, okay, hey, all right, I'm healed and I'm ready to come back. Okay, good, because we want you to wrestle AJ in Philly. You were probably like, oh, cool, awesome, knowing you. But was there a part of, oh, my God, I'm coming back against AJ? Ugh.
I'll tell you what, as far as my opponent, no, because I look at AJ and I just think, one of the best, if not the best wrestler in the entire world. So I thought, and that scenario, my quote-unquote dance partner was a good one. AJ's just fantastic. It being in Philadelphia was so cool. But you're very aware of this. This going behind the curtain a little bit, I even think Dave Meltzer from Wrestling Observer reported it. I wasn't cleared to wrestle that match until the Monday before. So, being cleared at the absolute last second, not being sure if I was even going to be able to return, was just such a roller coaster of emotions that I didn't even have time to really be nervous. It was like, you know, 1 second I wasn't sure, then I found out I was good, and then I shut my eyes for a couple hours and wake up and I'm in the arena, you know, getting dressed, getting ready to go wrestle AJ after a 5 month hiatus. So I didn't even have a chance really to be nervous, but fortunately for me, I think the stars were just aligned so well, because again, I was wrestling a guy like AJ. It was in Philadelphia, which is where I, you know, watched wrestling events growing up. It's where I had my very first wrestling match. I won the ROH world title in Philadelphia. And then I said, you know, I got my redemption in Philly. So it could have been cooler. You couldn't have painted a better picture or told a better story. So it was really, really cool. I, like I said, I didn't even think I had time to be nervous. I just went out and did what I do.
I did forget about the fact that you weren't cleared medically until the very last minute, which is, I just think that, I think that's awesome. I really, I think that's so cool. Nothing like keeping us waiting until the last minute, right?
You know? Right. Exactly. Of course. Of course. Only in pro wrestling.
And then give me your thoughts about Lethal versus Jay Briscoe at Best in the World, when Jay became the undisputed champion. Your viewpoints on that match, your thoughts, you know, how does that compare to anything you've done? Where do you see that match in history? Give me your thoughts on it.
No, well, I 100% think it will go down as one of the most influential and one of the most important matches and moments in Ring of Honor history, again, because so many things have been coming into place for Ring of Honor as a company. I mean, of course, that match itself was, you know, literally years in the making, with Jay Briscoe's undefeated streak, with Jay Lethal being on the tear that he's been on, and then those two fighting for both championships. And then our company as a whole, again, this is right around the time when Ring of Honor was, you know, getting ready or had just recently gotten their TV deal with Destination America. The relationship with New Japan Pro Wrestling was strong. We're continuing to sell out venues all across the country. So this, to me, was just a culmination of a new direction and a new the place that we were going with this company, and really showing that the sky's the limit. On top of that, I mean, the match itself was just total work of art, something that was enjoyable to watch. You know, like we say in wrestling, the curtain was sold out. You know, everybody was watching it from backstage, and it was certainly a moment that Jay Lethal has been working his entire life for. I've said this before too, and I firmly stand by this. I think Jay Lethal is probably the most well-rounded wrestler in all of pro wrestling right now. The guy's just fantastic to watch. I know his title reign will be extremely enjoyable. So it's cool. It was a really, really big moment. New York City knew it was big. Everyone watching around the world on pay-per-view knew it was big. And it was cool to be there live for it.
How much agony were you in physically at the end of the match at Final Battle?
I was in quite a bit of pain, Kevin. Like, I'll tell you what, though. That was definitely one of the most physical and grueling matches I had gone through. However, the one that takes the cake, the one that was by far the most brutal, was definitely the ladder war that I had in New Orleans. I remember so much so that quite a few people even had said, you know, and made comments that they were offended, you know, by the violence that we had in New Orleans. And I'll tell you, I certainly paid for it the next day. I remember waking up and we had to shoot, you know, 4 weeks of television the next day. And I was really, really sore. That was one of those things where it was like, man, am I even going to be able to get up and put my boots on and go to work today? Final Battle, again, that was very brutal. But to me, nothing compares to that first no disqualification-esque match I had with Jay Briscoe in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah, that was tough. And then, of course, you know, getting to have all the fun with Matt Hardy the next day, though. Come on, I mean, that...
Exactly. I think that's what kept me going. You know, being in there with Big Money Matt certainly helped the scenario.
Well, because he had had such a tough night the night before, you know, beating up poor Cheeseburger. And so counting his money, you know, straining his elbow, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
So, all right. Now you so you come back from the injury and everything is good, right? Like, you feel mentally strong, you feel ready to go. But I got to ask you, you've seen some of your peers, Kevin Steen, Claudio, Hero, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, Tyler Black before them. And they've left and they've gone to the WWE. Is that something that is, and I had said I was going to ask you this question. Is that something sure. that you want to do? Is this a dream and a desire for you to follow in their footsteps and to take that leap at some point in your career?
Well, I think I've said this before, and I firmly stand by this belief and this saying too. I think anybody who says that they wouldn't like to have a WrestleMania moment someday is probably lying to you, and probably is lying to themselves. So certainly, in the back of my mind, of course, the idea of maybe heading that direction someday is certainly that something that I keep in my mind. However, if you were to ask Adam Cole the same question 2 years ago, I would have immediately said, I really, really am enjoying my time in Ring of Honor, but WWE is my main focus. More and more, my opinion and my mindset and my goals in wrestling are changing. Just because I've enjoyed so much this journey and this process of growing with a company that has been there for me since 2010, seeing a group of guys being so passionate about taking this company as far as we possibly can, and knowing that I potentially am at the forefront of all of this is a really exciting time for me. So more and more I'm focused on what can I do to make Ring of Honor the best wrestling company that it possibly can be. And I really don't think too much about the future. Like I said, I've been so driven and focused on what's in front of me right now, because I feel like if you spend too much time and too much energy on focusing things that, one, you can't control, and two, are so far away, you lose not only the focus of achieving the goal that's right in front of you, but you don't enjoy the journey as much either. And I got to tell you, I've really been enjoying this journey. So I'm so excited to see where Ring of Honor is going to be 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now. That really, the only thing I'm thinking about is how can Adam Cole and Ring of Honor continue to grow and continue to get better. And I firmly stand by that.
And that's, again, I think that seems to be a pervasive feeling in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Would you say that it really seems kind of like an all for one, one for all kind of mentality?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this mindset that I share, and I don't want to speak for everybody, but that is certainly a mindset that I do not share alone. I know that our team definitely feels that way. It's a really like empowering feeling when you're with a group of guys that all share the exact same goal, the exact same mindset, and the exact same love for pro wrestling. And you know, you can't find a more pure form of pro wrestling anywhere in the world other than Ring of Honor. So I know that a lot of guys really stand by and really believe in the same things that I believe in. And I think that's why this company has grown so much. Whether it be the talent, whether it be the booking, whether it be the management, the marketing, anything like that, the entire team. I was literally down in Baltimore just talking to some of the guys behind the scenes today about how our entire team just connects so well. We all have the same goals. We all have the same vision. And it just really makes you really love coming to work every day.
It is, you know, it's a lot of fun. I know that, again, because we live close by to each other, so we've traveled to, you know, we've been on some flights together. You have this remarkable ability to fall asleep instantly while I have to sit there and stare at magazines. I'm very envious of you. That, for the hair, for the good looks, and for the ability to fall asleep.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kevin, I don't know if it's the ability to fall asleep instantly. I think it's the ability to stay awake the entire night before until I hit that plane seat.
That's
and
true.
Then I'm able to completely pass out. So that itself is an art form. I have mastered that. That's for sure.
That is the skill to which I would not even dare try. But all right. So now you come back from shoulder surgery. You're medically cleared. Not only did they, and it wasn't just a shoulder injury, right? I mean, tell everybody, like,
right.
It was more than that.
Sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to dive into that. Really, Kevin, what happened was, it was like a month or two after I won the Ring of Honor World Championship. I had been wrestling a match. I can't even remember against who, but I had done a dive, and I had slit my elbow really, really bad. Long story short, I ended up having a fracture in my elbow, and on the cut, I had a partial tear in my tricep from letting that arm go for so long. So I thought, oh, my God, I just won the Ring of Honor World title. I'm about to try to have the best run that I can. I cannot let this stop me. So I just continued to tape my elbow up, wear elbow pads and things like that. And I said to myself, I said, okay, I said, well, I'll get it fixed once I end up losing the Ring of Honor World Championship. Then I'll take some time off and get this elbow fixed. Well, that time came around, and I had become so accustomed and so used to wrestling with this banged up elbow and tricep that I thought, I don't really need to take time off. Let's just keep going. So I kept going, and a few months after that, I dislocate my shoulder on the same arm, and in the process, I completely tear my labrum. I didn't even realize that I did this at the time because I dislocated my shoulder, popped it back in, and finished the match like any other wrestler would do, like a dummy. And so I tried lifting weights, and I wasn't able to lift weights. And I thought, okay, you know, maybe I just got to change my training schedule. Then I was having trouble sleeping. Then I was waking up in the middle of the night with pain in my arm. I wasn't able to train. And long story short, the office ended up finding out about it. I hadn't even suggested taking time off. And it was brought to my attention that maybe it would be in my best interest to just get this arm fixed. I was, you know, 25 at the time. They're like, you're young, go get fixed. And so I finished out because I knew we had been building the final battle with Jay Briscoe. I finished up there, and then I took the time off to get the surgery.
And so you had the triple header of the dislocated elbow, the torn labrum, the completely torn tricep, and mm-hmm. they dug bone chips out of your elbow, right?
Correct. Yeah. And the doc said, too, he said, are you sure you want to get all these surgeries done at once? He said, because it's going to be, you know, quite the rehab process for you. And I said, absolutely, doc. I said, because I don't want to have to go get this fixed later. I want this to be a one and done thing. I don't care, you know, how tough the rehab's going to be, which it wasn't even that bad. Like I said, mentally, it was so much worse. But I wanted to get everything fixed at once, just one and done.
Jesus. And then, so now, so you're medically cleared, but now you've got to, you know, get back into shape or regain what might have been lost during that time off. What did you do anything differently training wise? Because to me, you came back and you had made some great gains,
right,
even though you had some time off. So what did you do differently? How did things change for you physically? What training methods did you do that was new?
Well, really the biggest thing for me is, you know, obviously my strength greatly changed. So for me, I was really watching the kind of movements that I was doing. I was doing more full body routines, but as heavy as I possibly could. And again, just rehabbing as much as I could and training as much as I could. But again, and I know I've shared this with you before, I was on this certain eating plan that when I was doing two-a-day style training, I was trying to do to put weight on. Well, naturally, when I took all this time off, I continued doing this eating plan while I was, you know, not exercising as much. So
sure.
I put a lot of weight on. So then when I had come back, when I came back in Philadelphia, I was 210, and that was the heaviest I've ever been. Now I've dropped down to about 204, 205, and I'm looking to get probably between 200 and 202 pounds, because now I can just fully go back to my old training style, which is weight training, conditioning training, and yoga in between that. But honestly, too, again, I wasn't able to fully train the way that I would have liked to. Right before I came back, because again, like I said, I had just been medically cleared before I came back. So just now, finally, I'm starting to see some results and starting to see some changes in my body that I'm happy with. And actually, as a matter of fact, I really look at this almost as a blessing, because for me myself, when I came back a little heavier, I thought, oh God, you know, this isn't what I want to look like. I want to look this certain way. But honest to God, the way my metabolism was, there's no way I would have ever put this weight on. So now that I'm slowly losing weight, I'm going to look probably exactly how I would like to, hopefully, you know, as the months continue going on. So actually, this time off is kind of a blessing as far as the weight gain goes.
It's always the hardest thing for wrestlers, but I have always been an advocate of time off. You know, if you ask any wrestler, hey, would you advise that there be seasons or off seasons for professional wrestling?
I think not.
I think by and large, a lot of you would say, well, on the surface, that might work, but not for me. Nobody wants time off. But the idea of off seasons, yes, it's a good practice in theory, but do it somewhere else because we don't want any time off.
You're exactly right. You know, an example, you know, when I look at Ring of Honor, we had 3 weeks off. which naturally the sound of that sounds amazing. It's like, oh, let's give our body a break. Let's rest up, just get caught up with stuff at home. But the truth of the matter is, a lot of us wrestlers, again, our lives are wrestling. So when we're not wrestling, we don't know what to do with ourselves.
I get done with my day job, and then I go do my wrestling job. You know, so it's the same thing, right? It's we're nuts.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So many times too, wrestling too. So much, at least in my beliefs, I think so much of it is confidence based off of momentum. So if you're wrestling 2-3 times a week, your confidence is at an all-time high because you're just constantly in the ring. And I think that's the case as well for even if you've been wrestling for 10 years, it's like the more you're in the ring, the more ready you feel, the more prepared you are, the more sharp you are mentally. So that's why finding other things to do as much as I can through wrestling has been big for me, just to make sure I stay, mentally sharp at the very least. But at the same time, my body certainly thanks me when I get some time off. That's for sure.
You have gotten to do standing back and looking at you, you've gotten to do a lot of cool things because of your wrestling career. And we've talked about some of them. But what are some of the things other than, of course, just the wrestling itself, outside the ring, other things, whether it be appearances or whatever? What are some of the things that you've done that's like, damn, this is pretty cool? Like, I got to ask you about when you were a kid and what you were like, because I know the story, but, the fan, you growing up, what are some of the things that you've gotten to do outside of just pure wrestling that you've been like, oh man, this is the coolest thing ever?
Yeah. And you mean this by through wrestling, correct?
Like, yes, like, exactly.
Okay.
Because of your celebrity or because of your fame, things you've gotten to do, right. Plus you've gotten to go.
Right. Well, I mean, God, there's so many off the top of my head, but like there's an example too of the one time I did a tour of Australia, and the guy who had booked me for Australia, he really wanted to make sure I had a great time. So I was just treated so well. We went to these really, really nice restaurants. I got to swim with sharks like in Australia, which was just so wild and so cool. I even think about stuff through Ring of Honor where it's, we're going to the Sirius satellite radio building and I'm talking, right beside the Opie and Anthony, radio show going on and cutting interviews and doing promos and things like that. Or even all the different people that you get to meet that, has been so wild, like Ronda Rousey and the Four Horsewomen being at wrestling events, that we've been to before. It's really wild. Like wrestling attracts so many different people from sports and so many different people from entertainment. It's a really wild ride. And it's a shame too. I tell myself that I should have kept a notebook of all the different things I've done and written them down and things like that, just based on the really cool experiences that we get. Cause for me, not only is the wrestling really cool, it's just the best job in the world, but the travel and the people that you get to meet and the places you get to go is just so wild and so surreal. Sometimes you got to pinch yourself and, realize that you are awake and this is really happening. So I just love the job so much.
One of the biggest pieces of advice I could ever give you, my friend, is take pictures and save these moments as best you can. Because I realized from all my time in the WWE, I never got one picture taken with The Rock. I never got one picture taken. I got a picture taken like one time, like with my, I was real good friends with D'Lo, and I think I got pictures taken with the Haas brothers. But
gotcha.
As far as like me and The Rock or me and Stone Cold, me and Taker, me and any of the guys I worked with, never.
Right.
It just wasn't something that entered into my mind, whether I thought it was markish or whether I thought it was stupid. But now it is one of the biggest regrets that I have in my life. I never took pictures of any trips that I went on or anywhere that I went. So don't make that same mistake. Enjoy every single moment of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
You were a big t-shirt kid, t-shirt wearer. I would imagine there were a few Attitude Era t-shirts in your collection. You wore t-shirts every day. Is that correct?
Every single day to school, Kevin. I think I may have told you this story, but I'll share it with everybody. I wore wrestling t-shirts so much and talked about wrestling so much that obviously me and females just never really connected in middle school and high school. because I was just such a wrestling nerd. And I'll never forget one day, this girl told me, she goes, "Do you own any other t-shirts besides wrestling t-shirts?" And I said, "Yeah, of course." And she said, "Well, why don't you wear any other t-shirts?" I said, "I just like to wear my wrestling t-shirts." She goes, "Well, I don't believe you." I said, "Well, that's fine. You don't have to believe me." She goes, "I'll pay you $20 if you wear a t-shirt to school tomorrow that is not a wrestling t-shirt." So I said, "Okay, deal. That's fine." So I wore some real crappy, terrible, generic t-shirt, not near as cool as Attitude Era wrestling t-shirts, to school. And so she was a woman of her word, and she gave me the $20. And with that $20, I bought the Rock's Just Bring It t-shirt and wore that to school like the following week. So I ended up getting the better of that deal. But yeah, huge t-shirt collector. And I still have all of them. I refuse to get rid of any of them. They don't fit me in anymore.
Now, are you still a t-shirt guy today? Like, you, I saw you, you know, on TV last week, you and Kyle O'Reilly teamed up, and you both were wearing the Onnit shirts, and I know your Onnit sponsorship. I want to ask you about that, but who are some of the guys, and I'm sure there's some outside of Ring of Honor too, who are some of the guys, whose t-shirts are you sporting these days?
Oh, whose t-shirts am I sporting these days?
Yeah.
Oh, lots of times I'll just wear like my friend's t-shirts, you know, or like Ring of Honor guys' t-shirts. Really, for the most part, this has actually worked great, but I'm sponsored by Suplex Wrestling, which is run over in England, and they make, you know, a great line of really comfortable and really, really cool t-shirts. So it's been awesome. I feel like I haven't bought a t-shirt in years because I just get a lot of cool free stuff. So I wear a lot of Suplex Wrestling stuff. I love that Roots of Fight gear that you can get from Las Vegas Fight Shop. Those guys are great, and they hook us up with some really cool stuff. And then obviously some Onnit t-shirts. But yeah, pretty much me. I'm a cheapskate when it comes to clothes. any free stuff I can get my hands on, I wear. So I've been pretty fortunate in that department.
It's a it's one of the perks of the job.
Absolutely.
okay, so we know that the goals and everything you want to see Ring of Honor go as far as it possibly can.
Absolutely.
What's your gut feeling? What do you think about this whole Destination America deal? Where do you see it? Pluses, minuses? Give me your thoughts.
I love it. Here's kind of how I feel about that. I feel that the entire Destination America deal is obviously, to me, nothing but a perk. What I mean by that is it doesn't change whatsoever the integrity of our product. Ring of Honor is Ring of Honor. You know exactly what you're getting. So to me, the fact that more people had the chance to tune in and check out Ring of Honor, and if the television show being on Destination America creates one more fan, great. Because I continue to stand by the fact that if people do see Ring of Honor, they'll never leave watching the show feeling disappointed, or they got gypped, or they didn't enjoy that hour of pro wrestling. So to me, again, just as we continue to grow, we're continuing to do what we always do, and that's deliver the best in-ring pro wrestling that we can. And if more people get to see it through Destination America, that's great. You know, the fact that we have a greater outreach now is good. And like I said, the more chance that we get, I think the better, because the fans that do check out Ring of Honor certainly always leave being very satisfied. So with the combination of the Sinclair stations and Destination America, this is just positive growth for the company all across the board.
How competitive do you think it's going to be for spots on the Japan shows next year? How how desperate will guys be wanting to be part of those events?
Oh, gosh. Everybody who's anybody in Ring of Honor, and by everybody, I mean, is going to want to be on those shows.
Including announcers and referees. So
yeah, everybody. Everybody, guys in marketing and guys in the office want to come to the shows. It's going to be great. You know, obviously New Japan Pro Wrestling being as big as it is, and our relationship with them continuing to grow, and a lot of our guys wanting the chance to go over to Japan, whether it even be for wrestling, like you said, just everybody involved in Ring of Honor wants to get over there. So, I'm sure, you know, like I said, everyone's going to want to be a part of it. It's going to be very historic for Ring of Honor. I don't think Ring of Honor has been to Japan since 2007. I think they did a couple shows at that point. But these are going to be even bigger, you know, being in Cork and Hall and stuff like that. So, Yeah, the competitive nature amongst our locker room is really going to increase come February. That's for sure.
The politicking will be in full force.
You
got to wrestle one of the most unique cats I've ever seen in wrestling, one of the most unique individuals ever, in Shinsuke Nakamura on Friday mm-hmm. night. Tell me about that experience, and fans will see that match, I think, in about a month on television.
So
it'll be a little while, but just your gut reactions on being there, being in there with him, you know, type of dude he was. What was it all about?
Well, when I was standing in the ring and his music hit, that was the biggest reaction I've ever heard for anybody while I was inside the ropes. It was crazy. You know, it was late. It was a 4.5 hour or 4 hour TV taping. Philadelphia was tired, but they could not wait to see Shinsuke. And when he came out, you know, that reaction was nuts. Like you had said, one of the most interesting, one of the most charismatic guys in wrestling, very much knows who he is, very much knows what he brings to the table. He's captivating. You know, I love and I enjoy watching him so much. When this relationship first started with New Japan, he was the guy that I was like, oh, man, I'd love to get in the ring with Nakamura. So to finally get that chance to do that was cool. It was even cooler that people specifically were, like, clamoring for that match. They really wanted to see it. They were really excited for it. So I think when people do check it out, they'll really, really enjoy it. He's certainly a guy that I could see facing again. I know this won't be the first and last time meeting. This will definitely be something that happens again. So, yeah, just unreal. It really thinks outside the box. He's completely spectacular, and he's a spectacle to watch.
Who are some of the guys that you study, be it older generation or maybe even some current guys, when you're looking to glean some knowledge from? Who are some of your most favorite targets in that regard?
Well, the guys that I really like to study, I've always enjoyed the guys that were able to, and by carry themselves like stars. I know that sounds like such a cliche and a generic answer, but there are some guys where it didn't matter at all what moves they did. The fans did not care whatsoever what their finisher was, like anything like that. Like they were so focused on these guys and the way that they walked and the way that they talked. And for me, that was guys like Steve Austin, guys like CM Punk, guys like Shawn Michaels. There were, you know, even like a guy like Eddie Kingston, who's an independent guy for such a long time. But the way that he would talk in promos and the way that he carried himself in the ring was so different from everybody. And there was such a connection and such an immediate understanding of who they are and what they brought to the table. I was always fascinated by those wrestlers, those guys that you knew exactly who they were. And each and every time they did anything, you know, whether they were in the opening match or the main event, you were so interested to see what they were going to do next. Like I said, I've just always been so fascinated by the characters of pro wrestling as opposed to the super work rate guys. Like I've always been really, really into the guys who were able to captivate me through promos or angles or things like that. Those were the guys that really stuck out to me.
I will, you know, much like the T-shirt bet you made in school, that was profitable for you, I'll give you $100 if you ever do a match where you don't do a move. You're on your way, by the way. I think one day you could probably do a match, bell to bell, minimum of 5 minutes, minimum. And I'm saying probably closer to 10 without touching the other guy, and the fans would love it.
Oh man. Well,
you're on
that's
your way.
A heck of a compliment and a heck of a challenge.
So there's a C-note coming your way if you can pull it off, and I'll
yeah,
make
yeah.
Coming to a random house show near you.
Yeah.
The got a lot of new guys in Ring of Honor as well, and again, some of the departures lead to mm-hmm. some opportunities and some openings, so it's always a good thing. A lot of good talent has come through the tryout camps, as we know. Some of the guys to me, Dalton Castle, Moose, just two mm-hmm. guys that got tremendous reactions Saturday night. Like, really, like, wow, these guys are over. What are your thoughts about them? I know you wrestled Dalton once. Talk to me about them in particular, or any other new guys that are kind of sticking out in your mind.
Yeah. Those two are perfect examples. Another guy that really sticks out to me is Donovan Dijak. I think the new crop of guys that we have coming in, again, they have a great understanding of who they are and why they're different. I think Ring of Honor as a whole, like our company, has been stronger than it's ever been before, just because our such wide array of, you know, cast of characters that we have. It's so cool. You know, you have someone like Dalton Castle, you have someone like Roderick Strong, you have someone like Moose, you have someone like Will Ferrara. Like, there are so many different guys that we have right now, and not everyone is the same. Because forever ago, when Ring of Honor was first starting to get really hot in middle of the 2000s or late 2000s, the favorite thing that people used to say is that Ring of Honor is just full of work great guys, but they're all like vanilla midgets. Like, everyone's the exact same. Everyone wrestles the same. Everyone does the same shtick. That is not the case now. I never felt that was the case, but even more so now, that is not the case. These guys are really connecting with the audience because, again, they do something different, but they do it very, very well. And, you know, although maybe what they lack in experience, they make up for in creativity and work ethic, and all those things will come together. I think each and every one of the new guys that we have brings something very unique and very different to the table, and they're going to continue to grow along with our fans and continue to get better, just like myself and Kyle O'Reilly and Michael Bennett and Michael Elgin all did back in 2010. So it's really cool. I think we got a really, really good new crop of guys.
And you're in kind of a good spot because you have been through that. You've been in the company 5 years, and it feels mm-hmm. like you've been there for a long time. But there are other guys that have been in the company, like Briscoes and Lethal, et cetera, that have more tenure than you do. So there's right. not that pressure, I think, to be, you know, oh, the old timer here. Back in my day, kid, here's how we did it back in 2010, you know, when Pierce was booking.
right.
You know, right. So so it's kind of good. So you've been able to sort of grow, you know, rise at your own level. There hasn't been a force. Nobody's been forced because of need or whatever, even though there was such, and I've talked to, you know, Delirious about this before, they've lost like 18 guys since the mid, you know, since 08-09, and top guys that were integral to drawing, you know, good houses and selling a lot of DVDs, and you and Elgin and Bennett and Taven and, you know, Kyle and Bobby and on and on and on, have just added to and have supplanted that group in just really great fashion. So I know you didn't come through the camp, but you were part of that generation where the beginnings of the camp, the beginnings of the tryout camps. And, you know, I'm just glad that you and the others are around because it's been nice to see you all grow up right before my eyes.
Well, that's the thing too, Kevin, is oftentimes I'm not labeled as a camp guy. But I like to say that I kind of am, because even though I didn't go to the camp, I was at the Ring of Honor school and the Ring of Honor dojo more than any of those guys. So in some capacity, it was kind of like I went through a camp. It was like I was going there every single week and learning from the guys and getting better and making improvements and kind of showcasing myself, you know, over that period of time. But yeah, it's been really, really cool. Like I said, with that core group of guys that have kind of come in together and now seeing these new guys that are coming in too, because again, Ring of Honor will always survive and always thrive because our entire roster is really given the opportunity to be the best that they can be. So what I mean by that is Dalton Castle, who just starts out, he wrestles, you know, Roderick Strong, myself, Jay Lethal, he's thrown in main events already, Moose thrown in main events already, to build them and get them ready in case and when there comes a time that a Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole and Michael Elgin isn't around anymore. So Ring of Honor does such a good job of always getting the next generation ready, so the company is always healthy. I mean, you know, there's never a situation, even when people feel that there will be, where guys leave and, you know, what's the company going to do now? That doesn't exist with Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor is always prepared and always ready and always has talent ready. And that's why Ring of Honor is going to be around for a real long time.
I'm going to put you on the spot. One day they will build a Ring of Honor Hall of Fame. And Adam Cole, you are the keeper of the ballots. You get to be part of the voting committee. So who is on your first? You get to vote in three. Who are your first three inductees into the Ring of Honor Hall of Fame?
Okay, that's a great question. My first three, first and foremost, would have to be Terry Silkin. because without Kerry, the company would not be where it is today. Number two would have to be Jay Briscoe, obviously, because he's been here since day one. And the guy is one of two first time or one of two two-time Ring of Honor World Champions. And number three would have to be Todd Sinclair, a guy who's been in the company for a very long time. Best referee in the business, still stand by that, and very influential for our company. But for me, if I had to pick three, it'd be Kerry Silken, Todd Sinclair, and Jay Briscoe.
Yeah, those are good. And I limit it to three because really, like, the first class is going to wind up being like 15.
I think because it's
because you start going through and it's like, all right, well, you know, CM Punk, Samoa Joe, Nigel McGuinness, Ryan, you know,
Roddy.
Then you go like Roddy and where do you stop? And even like an Eddie Edwards, you'll throw him in the mix.
Yep.
And you got to throw Mark in because you're throwing Jay in. They're the greatest tag team of all time.
Of course.
So now you start to, you know, really, and Kerry, and Todd mm-hmm. Sinclair, and Bobby Cruz, because he'll bitch mm-hmm. if I don't say Bobby Cruz. Carino gets first ballot votes, and, mm-hmm. you know, so now you're starting to talk. You're over a dozen. And it's, you know, at the blink of an eye. So
exactly.
It's pretty damn good if you think about it.
yeah, totally. I mean, you look at our roster, and I think, like, oh my gosh, anyone who's, you know, wrestled for Ring of Honor could almost be considered a Hall of Famer because everyone's had so much influence. And that's a pretty cool position to be in for a company like us.
Are you surprised? And are you surprised with how well Kevin Owens has done? And are you fearful or concerned that maybe the bloom might be off the rose a little bit and he might be hitting some rough waters? What do you think about that?
I'm not surprised whatsoever at Kevin's success, just purely based on how smart and how much of a mind he has for wrestling. I've traveled the world with Kevin. I've wrestled in Ring of Honor and in many promotions outside of Ring of Honor. And just the way he thinks about wrestling and how passionate he is about wrestling. And again, his ability to connect with an audience is a one in a million, once in a lifetime kind of guy. So if given the ball, which he was, it, you know, gave me no surprise whatsoever. I was extremely ecstatic and happy for Kevin, but it didn't surprise me in the least. And as far as being worried about Kevin, I'm not worried about Kevin, because this kind of dip, that people are fearful of now, with people saying, oh, is Kevin's push being derailed? What's going on? This has happened to Kevin literally in every promotion he's ever worked for. It's happened to him in Ring of Honor, but eventually things turn around for Kevin when given the opportunity, which I think will happen again. They've already given him the ball once. So as long as Kevin sticks with it and someone gives him another shot and he keeps working hard and the crowd keeps reacting to Kevin the way that they are, I think Kevin's going to be just fine. I think he's going to be just fine.
Where do you see yourself in maybe, I don't know, let's say 15 years from now in professional wrestling?
Oh, man. Ugh, that you would have to say.
You would have wrestled for, what, nine? You've already wrestled nine years?
7 years.
Seven. Okay, so so you'd be 22 years in wrestling at that point. That's a long career.
Gotcha. Yeah, that is.
You're going to either, what, walk away or... are you going to be a behind-the-scenes guy? What do you want to do?
I'm totally going to be a behind-the-scenes guy, you know, if I'm able to. Wrestling is something I'm passionate about, not only performing but being a part of. Whether that be running my own wrestling school, whether that be me being a manager, whether that be me running a wrestling company, like the idea of dabbling in some booking here and there really interests me. I love being around it. There's something that clicks in my brain that makes me feel like this is my purpose anytime I'm around wrestling. Like if I'm on a show where I am just signing autographs, I feel different. If I'm on a show where I'm helping agent things, like when I was out with my injury, I feel different, and I feel different in a positive way. This certainly, you know, they say that when you find your purpose in life, that's one of the most magical feelings that a human being can possibly feel. And wrestling makes me feel that way. So literally until the day that I die or the day that I can't anymore, I'm going to be involved in wrestling in some capacity. The idea of retiring and sitting at home and just fishing with my wife and my kids. I would love to get married someday. I would love to have children someday, but wrestling will always be my first love. And it's something that I'm always going to be attached to. So certainly wrestling is something that I'm going to be a part of forever. You know, like I said, there's so many different aspects and so many different avenues you can take in wrestling. There's no such thing as knowing everything or learning everything. That's very appealing to me. So yeah, like I said, I'm going to be involved in this as long as I possibly can, Kevin.
So you made history, of course, by being part of the first Ring of Honor television show on the Sinclair Broadcast Group stations, and you and then of course you reunited with your Future Shock partner Adam Cole in this past weekend show, and everybody will see that this Wednesday. You also made history by being the first guest on the Kevin Kelly Show, and now you return. Is this episode like 41 or 42? I can't remember, but
excellent.
Anyway, so it's been a hell of a ride, but good job, and I'm glad you were able to join us here tonight, and I look forward to being able to call many, many more of your matches and seeing how far you go in this career and in this life, young man.
No, thanks very much, Kevin. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Yes, sir. All right, that's Adam Cole, everybody. We'll take a quick break. We'll give some thoughts about Field of Honor, and we'll wrap up this edition of the Kevin Kelly Show when we return. Stay with us.
Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacemanNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Do you watch pro wrestling? Do you love pro wrestling? We do too. And there's only one podcast feed that you can't miss.
PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. That's the Pro Wrestling Only, Place to Be Nation, Podcast Network.
We have a host of brilliant shows dedicated to wrestling past and present.
Whether it's the territories, Japan, Lucha, old school or new school, we've got something for you.
Get a dose of history on Exile on Bad Street with Chris Zellner.
Listen to reviews of current pay-per-views on the PTBN reaction shows. Not just WWE, but New Japan, Ring of Honor, and NXT. And get your weekly update on everything else that's going on in the indies, lucha, and beyond on This Week in Wrestling.
Relive WCW Supercards on Where the Big Boys Play with Parv and Chad.
Join Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave on one of the very best shows for super hardcore nerds, Wrestling Culture.
Go deep into WWF history and discover the Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino eras on Titans of Wrestling.
Don't miss the Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston.
You can get the full archive of Good Will Wrestling with Good Old Will from Texas.
There's Tag Teams back again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze.
Then there's the only pro wrestling game show, Brain Buster, with me, Johnny Sorrow, and a panel of great guests every time.
Get them all on one feed.
PWOPTBN Podcast Network.
You know you want to hear it.
That Adam Cole's a pretty cool cat, and we were thankful he was able to join us, of course. You can find out more about Adam Cole at ROHWrestling.com. There's some Adam Cole merchandise up there, like the Kingdom, and maybe even scour for an old Future Shock t-shirt or some of his suplex wear that he was talking about. It's all available at ROHWrestling.com. Ring of Honor sold a lot of t-shirts, sold a lot of merchandise. In fact, sold a lot of autographed baseballs this Saturday at Field of Honor in Brooklyn. And JR, you were there live, as was I. We had a great photo op, and it was, everyone was happy. There was joyous, raucous laughter. It was, from your view, it looked like, it looked like what? A hot mess? Did we do something good? What was going on?
The show as a whole?
Yeah.
No, it was good. I enjoyed it. I mean, you had to take it for what it was, because the other ones I've been to have been a lot of, TV tapings or iPay-per-view or whatever. And this was more of a house show, in a way. I know it's going to be released later, but really more of a house show. Not a lot of big angle, progression, some great matches. So, and again, I thought the only thing that did hurt it besides that is just that the atmosphere is lost a bit in that setting. And it's an awesome setting. Like, I'm really glad I went. I thought it was really cool with that backdrop and the feel of the show. But it wasn't that hot. And it may have been, but you couldn't feel it. Like that hot Ring of Honor crowd that you always get,
A little different.
That was missing.
Absolutely.
I think it hurt the drama of a few of the matches, that's all.
How about some of the star power that you saw?
Yeah.
Takeaways. I'll say it like this. When Dalton Castle's music hit, I was shocked at the level of eruption for him.
Yeah.
Like, it just caught me by surprise how loud they were for him. Thoughts?
Yeah, they were into him. He was really over. And the gauntlet was fun. I mean, he had the good Bushwhacker Luke surprise, and him whacking his way around the bases was pretty funny. And a little callback to Rumble 91 where he marched in and got tossed right out. But yeah, the star power, and I'm not going to say a big New Japan guy. I'm just not a knowledgeable New Japan guy. Like, I haven't really seen much of it. So I know the names, but it was cool to see them and kind of a faces to the names and outside of, who I've seen on TV. The main event was very good. Lethal and Nakamura versus Red Dragon, but I liked Okada. Roderick Strong seems to be getting the buzz for the match of the night, and it was really, really, really good as Strong kind of completes his career renaissance here over the last year or so, upping his game quite a bit. I really loved the War Machine match. That was a lot of fun. As a fan of big Haas guys beating the crap out of each other, that's exactly what we got with that match. Really cool in your face. And, I like Rowe and Hansen. We've had them both on the show here, so I feel like I know them a little bit anyway. So they're cool guys to get behind.
How about that kooky eight man?
Yeah, so I was going to talk about that. I loved that match. And it's funny because, the last show I saw was in Philly, and the six man there was like work rate, heaven with Styles and the Bucks. So I didn't know what to expect coming in because of who was in it. A couple of the same guys, the Bucks, Seidel. So you're kind of not sure what to expect. And I really enjoyed it. I like that they took advantage of the setting and the stuff with Taven and Bennett and Maria doing the baseball stuff around, running around the bases and pretending to hit the home run. Like, it's cool that they took the time and they tailored their stuff to, to the atmosphere and to the arena, to the setting. And I loved the double super kick when I think it was Taven rounded the bases the second time, or Bennett, whoever it was that did it the second one, and then the Bucks came over and super kicked him as he came around third. Like, that was really cool.
Yeah, they had they certainly a good time was had by all. I loved just sitting there and being under the stars and doing this wrestling show, and it was great, great fun. Were you surprised at the level of turnout that we had Saturday?
It was great. I mean, what did it end up being? It had to be like, what, around 2,000 or so? That's what it felt like. And it was good. I mean, the whole middle, you know, middle three sections or whatever were pretty much full, like behind home. And, I mean, those fill up. You know, there's a lot of seats there, and those were all filled up. And you compare it, like, to some, like, Global Force pictures that are out there. I mean, it was not even close. You know, I don't know how much NXT hurt you guys. I'm not sure
how many come. And that's the thing. When I saw, I was like, oh, boy, they're running the Barclays Center. And, oh, boy, they've sold out already. I'm like, oh, man, there's going to be, like, 11 people in our place. We're not going to have anybody there. And just to, you know, that there was, you know, that size crowd. It was more than last year. So,
and I think what helped you, too, is that your tickets were on sale for a while before NXT was announced.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying people didn't choose you over that. I'm saying a lot of people got excited, bought their tickets for Ring of Honor, and then were locked in for Ring of Honor. And that's what we did, and I was happy with the decision. But, yeah, I do wonder how much bigger the crowd may have been without that alternative.
That's fair. No buyer's remorse, though, from you. Huh?
No, not at all. I had a great time. We had a blast. And just the setting was nice, too, because we could sit. You know, we were sitting up in our seats, and then we were kind of, a few of us would get up here and there. We'd stand up in the concourse and BS a bit while we're watching the matches. It was just a nice, relaxed atmosphere. I will say this. If it was my first Ring of Honor show, and this has nothing to do with the quality of matches, I probably would have been thinking it felt a little, I don't say bland, but I probably would have been thinking, oh, this is the ROH atmosphere I always hear about. You know, I think that's the only thing with that setting that maybe hurt things a little bit. Like, if that was my first, I've been to a bunch, so I know, I get that, oh, okay, there's a setting. I know when we're in a building, it's, you know, molten. So that's the only thing I would say, but it did not in any way affect my enjoyment of the show. I don't not regret going to it. Everyone worked hard and put on great matches, and it was a lot of fun.
All right, so where will your fan travels take you and the PTBN staff next?
So this year we did Philly, we did the Rumble and Ring of Honor, then obviously this weekend. Our next goal is TLC, which is in Boston in December. So that's usually like a one-day thing. We don't do the weekend. Obviously, there's not much else around that show. So we just do, usually we go up to the show all together, get lunch or dinner or whatever, and then call it a day. And we got tentative plans for Dallas. We'll see. I know it's a tough haul for a lot of our group, so we'll see if that can happen.
And if
ROH ever comes back to Providence, I'll be there.
I think we have to at some point. My God, we've got TV there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not only in Providence on WJAR, but also on NESN.
Yep.
So what's the deal? Come on. Let's go, Ring of Honor. Get us in Providence again. And get something in Boston, too. Let's go. Can't be that hard, right? How about the Yankees tonight? You happy with that? Or
yeah.
Are you recording the game?
No, I have it on TV2 over here. I was worried that they were going to blow that. That had, you know, blowing that game written all over them. Especially when they didn't score. They had a couple on in like the eighth or whatever, or the seventh or eighth, and then I thought the Astros would come up and score. Great strike them up, throw them out in the ninth, and then they win on a walk-off sack fly from A-Rod. So they needed to after that, losing 3 out of 4 to the stupid Indians over the weekend.
How about, so fantasy football players around the world are lamenting because of the loss of Jordy Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And now a lot of people are saying that somehow they should amend the football preseason because of all the injuries that are happening this year. What are your thoughts?
I don't know. Sure. I mean, it sucks. I know when it's your guy, it sucks. I remember when Chad Pennington broke his hand way back against the Giants and it was awful, really sucked. But I feel like if they didn't feel like they needed it, I feel like it would already be gone. You know what I mean? Like, I know it makes money. I know the owners want it. But I still feel at the core, if all the coaches and all the players really spoke out about it and were like, we don't need any of this, we can go from camp into a live play and be fine,
yeah,
I think it'd be gone. Because I think at the least, coaches just wouldn't play their guys at all. Like, if it really didn't matter, why would you ever play anyone that matters?
exactly. But and again, you know, like in like Adam Cole was saying before, how wrestling 2 to 3 times a week is helpful, and how having, you know, the last 3 weekends off, not only does it mentally affect you, but it also physically might, you know, dull the tools a little bit. So I think the same argument could be made about football as well. Injuries happen no matter what they do. I mean, Jameis Winston turned his ankle tonight in their preseason game. It doesn't mean he's, his season is over by any stretch of the imagination. And Jordy Nelson could have twisted his knee the way he did in practice, like Kelvin Benjamin. Mm-hmm. I think that it's just kind of par for the course. But if they're looking to change the game, I think it's.
I mean, they could maybe cut a couple back, maybe one or two,
but then add to the regular season.
Yeah, because they'd have to, which not a great idea either. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's tough. I mean, it's probably fine how it is. Maybe they could cut one out and just make it. I don't know. Maybe add one game to the regular season and get rid of the last preseason game. But, I mean, preseason's big for those undrafted rookies or late-drafted guys. I mean, it is big for them. That's their chance to make the bottom of the team. And a lot of those guys do make the team because of their performance in these games. So you'd also be really seriously affecting those guys and evaluation of them.
I drove home from Brooklyn Saturday night and had Sirius on in the car. I was listening to the NFL. They had a I was listening to San Diego and Arizona. And they were talking about, gosh, I can't remember his name, undrafted rookie free agent quarterback who I guess went to Wake Forest, but originally was either recruited by or was part of Alabama. He may have gotten into some trouble, let's just say that, and got, you know, kicked off the squad or whatever.
Yep.
But he's trying to fight to make the team. And it was some of the most dramatic football I've heard.
Right.
For a meaningless fourth quarter, 2-minute drill where this guy was trying to make the club. And even the announcers said, it's a, you know, oh my gosh, he may not even make the 53-man roster, but at the very least, you know, and I was just like, yeah, go for it. So those stories won't happen if you get rid of the preseason.
Right. No, and it's their life. Not even a story for you. I mean, it's their livelihood.
Yeah.
Which is the bigger part of it. By the way, speaking of Sirius, have you added Sirius Fly to your favorites yet?
No. What is Sirius Fly?
It is a new channel. Well, it's been an internet channel for a while and been one of my favorites. And it is now, when they did a little reshuffling a couple weeks ago, they added it to the main roster. And I don't know if you knew, Backspin moved up to 43. Fly now slots in at 47. And it's like a later era Backspin. So it's 90s and early 2000s hip hop.
Oh, okay.
It is. We had it on pretty much the whole way, you know, driving all around this weekend. And it's fantastic. It's my wheelhouse. It's like my playlists, basically, at home on my phone.
Backspin has always been one of my core stations because right. that was my musical wheelhouse in high school / college. So. I definitely would check that out. So that's at 47 and they move Backspin to 43.
Yep.
All right. That's good.
Check it out.
All right. So, and I'm exhausted by the whole, Deflategate thing. How many games do you think Brady winds up serving? What's your gut tell you?
My gut is so tired of hearing all of this. I don't care. I don't know. I really don't know. Cause I don't know what the judge is going to say. Like, I don't think Goodell is going to back down. At this point, he's all in. I mean, the judge can't clear Brady. He's going to say Goodell went, you know, crazy. But I can't get around the fact that the judge will just say, yeah, Goodell's an idiot. He way overpunished you. But you guys signed off on it. I can't overturn the arbitrator. You agreed to have him be the arbitrator in your collective bargaining agreement. If you don't agree with it, you shouldn't have done it. Like, I can't get past that point, which to me is like the end of it all. Like, yes, I can agree with you, Tom Brady. This guy is a power maniac and he really screwed you over. And whether you did anything or not, didn't deserve this. But you know what? It got to this point, and within the system that you and your union agreed to, everything was followed correctly. And that's all we can do. You know, like, I can't get past that. That's like, how do you get around that?
Dan McGinn, are you available? I got to bring some balance to this because you're not a Patriots fan. You're a Jets fan, and that's okay because I thought your analysis was very clear and very concise. But Dan McGinn, as a Patriots fan, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. what's your gut say? How many games does Brady wind up getting? I don't want to hear your emotional diatribe. I want clear, concise analysis based upon the facts.
This judge, I mean, I don't know if he's showing his hand a little bit too much, but I mean, this judge clearly doesn't think the NFL has that strong of a case. So, I mean, I'm not sure if ultimately he's going to have the power to say one way or the other. I mean, he obviously can rule, but at the end of the day, I think the NFL is just going to do what they want to do, and this is all just a bunch of noise. Honestly, I don't think he should get any, but you obviously knew that was happening.
Yeah, well, of course.
But
I think it's ridiculous that he was given this suspension when the league rules state he gets a $25,000 fine.
Right. I mean, so. The punishment certainly doesn't fit the crime, but then again, life isn't always fair, and I think that if any team is prepared for this sort of thing, it's the Patriots, and you know they're just going to continue doing whatever the decision is and whatever the suspension is. You know, they're just going to continue to win ball games
all
and
right.
Annoy
again.
Everybody
all
else.
Right.
So,
bye again. Thank you. I do hope that the story of him being a skunk and a reprobate and cheating
Brady?
On Gisele Bündchen, yes,
yes,
comes out because he's flaunting his 4 Super Bowl rings on the plane mm-hmm. with Ben Stiller or Ben Affleck's
right.
nanny. Trust me, he ain't doing that because he's wanting to look cool. You know what I'm saying?
Well, he's there got a history of it, man. He left his pregnant wife for this one. So,
what
yeah,
a skunk.
Yeah. Anyway.
What an absolute skunk.
I mean,
right.
Goodell probably should have just taken the chance to cut it to a game and say this is for not cooperating. I mean, that's probably what he should have done, but I think at this point he's all in, so why not just keep it going?
I'd like to have, if it's okay with you, in 2 weeks, I'd like to have Ray Rowe back on the show because a GoFundMe is currently being is in the final stages right now, at least of the first round, and because they did a documentary about his return, the path it's called, and I was interviewed for it, and it's really amazing. It was a year ago Friday that Ray Rowe was in a horrific motorcycle accident that not only almost took his wrestling career but his life, and then this past Friday he wrestled in Philadelphia with his tag team partner in War Machine, and it was just great for him to be able to have that experience. So if it's all right with you, JR, in a couple of weeks, can we have Ray Rowe on the show?
It's your
Does
show,
that work?
Babe.
I know, but I like to make it seem like you're in charge.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Taz, of course, going to CBS Radio, so I think there's a future in that for us.
Hmm.
I think we can ride his coattails of podcasting success.
That'd be a rocket buster.
I forgot he used to say that. That was so good.
Off the chain.
And is there anything
go,
else?
Joe, watch out!
Is there anything else you would like to add, JR?
No.
Before we wrap up this
no,
edition,
I need
of
to
Kevin
go to bed. It was a long weekend. Got in around 3 a.m. this morning and have been moving ever since. So I am ready to go crash.
Did you all right? So enjoy work tomorrow. Did you sleep at your desk today? Is that what happened?
No, I took a vacation day today.
Oh, very nice.
Non-stop around the house. I mean, vacation with 2 children, 3 and under. You know, is not quite vacation. So
not at all. All right. Well, that's it for this edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. I want to thank Adam Cole. Great guest, ROHWrestling.com. Check out Adam Cole and his Future Shock tag team partner this coming Wednesday night at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on Destination America when Cole and Kyle O'Reilly take on the Addiction for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Championships. That's the main event this Wednesday. And we'll see Adam and all the stars of Ring of Honor this coming Saturday night in Atlanta. And if you're interested in going, you can get tickets at the door, or you can go to ROHWrestling.com. And then we're gearing up for All-Star Extravaganza on Friday night, September 18th. And that's from San Antonio, Texas, live on pay-per-view. So cable, satellite, pay-per-view on Friday, September 18th. Jay Lethal is, the world championship is going to be on the line. The television title is going to be on the line. Lethal defending against Bobby Fish in the world championship match against Kyle O'Reilly. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll see what happens at the pay-per-view. So for Dan McGinn, we thank him for throwing in his 2 cents, and he does get some change back. JR, thank you for everything as well. for you for listening. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks with Ray Rowe here on the Kevin Kelly Show on Place to Be Nation, our website home, placetobenation.com.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was, like, obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cock.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh my God, he's back!
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you?
No, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.
Of a red regret. Don't give a foolish game all you've got to bet.